A warmer fuzzy low! Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. We're going to be joined in segment number two by a good friend of ours, Matt Joseph. So you know him better as Mid-Major Matt. Does a great job over at ESPN Radio in Richmond. He does a great job with the Prop Queen website and the Prop Queen podcast as well. We're going to be chatting it up with him about what we've all seen here in the first month of the season. Some of the teams that we might be seeing a little bit of a tempo change with, the way that he takes a look at these next few games with maybe a little bit more credence in the first few games of the season. We'll highlight a few games that we've got for Thursday as well, and then we'll take a little bit of a look at the ACC-SEC Challenge, what we've all been getting there in the final segment. Going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you have one or two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, learners, the naming does not matter, so as per usual, please send these into the timeline, and the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Well, I did not get in any Twitter/X questions today. Everything is powered by Better. That is BETR on Better. They're making it better to be able to dive into the game because they're allowing you to be able to get $10 free when you go to BETR.app and you type in that promo code of VSIMPOD. That is VSIMPOD. And all you need to do to be able to dive in on some action is take a look at a player, determine whether or not they're going to go over or under their stat line, and boom, you're all good to go. And where jurisdictions have it, you're able to bet on some money lines, some spreads as well. So they've got a little bit of a bundle of everything for you, and we've got a bundle of everything to take a look back at with regards to college basketball slate for Wednesday. Let's dive in, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
The state with the smallest drinks in the union, Minnesota, gets the job done 73-64 over Indiana. For Indiana, just 8-27 from three-point range, and three-point shooting positivity did come to Minnesota in this one. They were headlined by Cade Tyson along with Langston Reynolds, both being able to slide 17 points apiece. You had Bobby Durkin go 3-6 from three-point range. Now for Minnesota, 19-27 at the free throw. I might want to clean that up, but they win the rebound battle by a count of 40-25. They needed it because they actually lost the turnover battle 16-7, but Indiana a little bit cold on this night, not necessarily doing the world's greatest job on the glass, and Minnesota, they were able to pick them off. Also getting picked off was Cornell in the second half of back-to-back, 93-80. Towson, they're able to get the job done out there for the Towson squad. It's a team that is very slow in control, but how about them going 11 of 22 from three-point range in this one for Towson? They won the turnover battle 12-11, so they were able to do a pretty rock-solid job out there, and you also had a rock-solid win from BYU. They take down Cal Baptist by a count of 91-60. A Cal Baptist team that has been pretty rock solid here in the last few weeks, but Cal Baptist just 6 of 23 from 3. Dominic Daniels was only able to throw in their 8 points, and A.J. DeBancet, Kevin Keita, they both had 22 points apiece. Keita was able to supply 14 rebounds. Cal Baptist team has been rock solid on glass, lost that battle 41-29. For BYU, they win the turnover battle by a count of 14-10, and for BYU, they also had Robert Wright be Mr. Wright with 11 assists, 15 points for a rock-solid double-double out there. They also had a rock-solid win from Arkansas. As a home underdog, they take down Louisville by a count of 89-80 for Louisville, just 8 of 37 from three-point range, and you still got the over in this game because Arkansas goes 27-35 at the free-throw line. Darius Acuff was able to spy 17 points. Trayvon Brazil, he throws in their 21 as well, and off the bench, all three players that gave it off the bench for Arkansas had at least 10 points. Billy the Kid Richmond, 10 points. You had Malik Ewing give you 12 points, 9 rebounds, and Malik Thomas, 17 points. Arkansas, they get a big win for their resume, and they also actually lost a turnover battle by a count of 10-9, but won that rebound battle 46-36. So really good showing out there. Now we're doing this out of UCLA versus Washington going final, but as I'm recording this, 73-57, UCLA is in the lead. I do have to have this up by midnight Pacific, 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern, but you did see Clemson get a cover against our Alabama. Alabama does find a way to get the job done, but 90-84 the final and 99 points in the second half. A lot of overwhelming second halves in college basketball on Wednesday, by the way, but for Alabama, 12 of 34 from three-point range, LeBaron Phylan, he was able to give the team 29 points. And for Clemson, they go just 4 of 19 from 3-point range, but they hold in there by winning the rebound battle by a count of 43-39. They kept things clean. They won the turnover battle by a count of 9-7. And 19 points out of RJ Godfrey, along with his 4 rebounds, was able to keep the team lively as Zach Foster also went 5 of 17 from off the bench. You don't find that very often. And for Auburn, they get a nice winning cover over NC State, as for the ACC, they really reigned supreme in night number 1 of the ACC-SEC Challenge. Night number 2 went a little bit more to the SEC, 83-73 the final, as for Auburn, they go 12 of 22 from 3-point range. Keshawn Hall just continues to deliver, 28 points, 10 boards, 5 of 7 from 3. Kevin Overton, 6 of 9, very nice from 3-point range. He supplied the team with 29 points, so Todd Fredford only gave the team 6 points, but did not matter in this one. As for NC State, they also won the turnover battle by a count of 20-9. That's absolutely harebrained and crazy, but on the possessions where Auburn did not have a turnover, they were able to execute. And for NC State, they shoot just 41% from the floor, 10 of 30 from 3-point range. So Auburn's hot shooting was able to win the day there, and also being able to win the day. How about what we saw out of Iowa State? 132-68, the final in this one. As for Alcorn State, man, this was not great to say the least. They go 8 of 19 from 3, but Iowa State goes 22 of 30 from 3-point range. Milan Mimo-Zilovic, 8 of 9 from 3 for 27 points. Off the bench, Jamarian Bateman, 7 of 10 from 3 for 26 points. They were without in this game. Jamon Lipsby, once again, did not matter. So you're able to get a nice quality win and cover out of Iowa State, and got a nice quality win and cover out of Vanderbilt as well. How about them taking down SMU by a count of 88-69, as for SMU, high-powered offense just goes 2 of 17 from 3-point range. You did have Kevin Miller be able to supply 17 points. They still refused to call him Boopy, but for Vanderbilt, they win the turnover battle 13-5. They actually lose the rebound battle 38-30. But for Vanderbilt, despite going just 6 of 24 from 3, you had Tyler Tanner be able to supply the team with 26 points. The Duke Miles only had 10 points in this one. But Vanderbilt, they were able to step up defensively. They do find a way to be able to get that win and cover. And in terms of Big Ten conference play, it was a no-show effort from the first half in Northwestern, and that cost to them, as Northwestern actually won the second half by a count of 41-30. But they lose this game 85-73. As for Wisconsin, unconscious in the first half, they finish overall 11 of 31 from 3, but John Blackwell, he was able to do a very solid job, 26 points, 11 rebounds. And for Wisconsin, they win the turnover battle by a count of 12-7. Northwestern actually wins the rebound battle by a count of 37-33, but for Northwestern, just 4 of 19 from 3-point range. And Arrington Page, he was able to supply the team with 21 points, so that was a nice rock solid win for them. And then also out there in the SEC ACC Challenge, you did see Georgia Tech at home get it taken to them by Mississippi State, this by a count of 85-73. As for Mississippi State, just 6 of 22 from 3-point range, but Josh Hubbard, their main man, he was able to spy 25 points, and Georgia Tech continues to be rough with their offense, as they won 26 of 77 from the floor, 8 of 30 from 3-point range. They got plenty of possessions. They won the turnover battle by a count of 13-5, but not great there. As for Mississippi State, they also won the rebound battle by a count of 47-42, so they were able to get themselves a nice winning cover for the ACC. You did see Boston College actually push LSU to overtime, but unable to get the job done there. 78-69 final as for this Boston College team. They actually go 9-24 from 3-point range, but they lost the turnover battle 14-10 as Deion Thomas, he was able to lead the way, 23 points, 7 assists. And for LSU, just 3 of 19 from 3-point range, but they win that rebound battle 46-41 as Markel Sutton, he supplies the team with 13 points, 8 rebounds. But the ACC was able to get this one home, as I believe that this was the lone team from the ACC that won a game in the ACC-SEC Challenge on Wednesday. Virginia, they go on the run and they absolutely paced Texas by a count of 88-69, as for Texas, 4 of 19 from 3, Virginia 12 of 24 from the outside. And for Virginia off the bench, you had Chance Mallory and Jakari White both be able to give you double figures. White was able to supply 10 points, 16 out of Mallory. And for this Virginia team, they actually lose a rebound battle by kind of 35-34, but they did a nice job keeping things clean. Only 7 turnovers out of them. And Trayvon Mark continuing a little bit of a lackluster season, only 9 points in this one. And then in other games that were just random, wild, and crazy out there in college basketball, you did see just an absolute pacing given to Little Rock, as Little Rock loses to Central Arkansas, which I saying that in and of itself, Little Rock was a favorite in this game, but here's what was really stunning. They were down 53-19 at the half. Final in this one, Central Arkansas looks to be back in full force. They win this game 85-47 as he had 15 points, 8 boards, 6 assists out of Ty Robinson. Central Arkansas looking rock solid and not so much for Little Rock. And then how about North Alabama out there in the Atlantic Sun? They get a outright win as a 14-plus-point underdog against San Francisco, 65-63. The final for North Alabama, they only go 3-15 from 3, but they did a nice job winning that rebound battle, 46-31. Nice game out of Cornelius Williams, 12 points, 8 rebounds, and for the Dons, they only go 9 of 31 from 3-point, so North Alabama, a nice quality win there. Kent State continuing to play super up-tempo, winning cover against Austin Peay, 96-84 after Kent State was one of the worst 3-point shooting teams in all of college basketball last season, 13 of 24 from 3. Austin Peay went 13 out of 31 themselves from 3-point, but for this Kent State team, they were able to have on their side Rocco Gillespie, another double-double, 22 points, 10 rebounds, so that was a very quality winning cover out there. And Gardner Webb continues to be, 107-74. They lose to Queens NC, so they got completely pasted in that one. You saw a lot of overs out there in the Ryzen League as Northern Kentucky takes down Cleveland State 95-80 as you had 21 points, 10 rebounds, 4 blocks out of LJ Wells, one of their main returners from a season ago, and then Oakland over Purdue Fort Wayne 101-92. That was a line of about 8 or so, so that was a little bit of a tight one, but Oakland finds a way to persevere in Detroit all over IU Indy, but IU Indy only 29 points in the first half. They got things cranked up in the second half, but they had 170 total points in this game and a very easy under 92-78 the final, which is still very crazy to take a look at these IU Indy totals. By the way, in Belmont, they lose for the first time all season. They fall to the Richmond Itsy Bitsy Spiders 84-76 as Richmond, they go 14 out of 25 from 3, just 11 of 34 from the outside for Belmont as Tyler Lumbly, a little bit of a disappointing performance here, 2 of 12 from 3-point, but how about Will Johnson, 19 points, 3 of 5 from 3-point. Richmond now 7-1 thus far this season, so they've been able to get things a little bit more rocking and rolling, and also being able to get things rocking and rolling. Pacific on the road 80-65. They're able to pace Air Force. Oregon State has been playing a lot of tight games at home. They were able to take down Vermont 80-58. Final in that one. And for San Diego State, it's been a little bit of a tumultuous start to the season for them, but they were able to get a quality under and they were able to take down Utah Valley by a count of 77-66. And for San Diego State, most of their pieces are back in the fold. Magoon Gwath, he has been able to return. He was able to get the team in this one in just 16 minutes, about 7 points, but just having him back out there is big. And then you had Tay Simmons along with BJ Turn It Up Davis off the bench, be able to supply a combined 33 points. So that was a quality win for San Diego State. And if you're taking a look at trend-wise, what we're getting in college basketball right now, as I was mentioning, just a very overwhelming day of college basketball on Wednesday. But you take a look at the last 7 days, we have been seeing a ton of unders, 133 unders to 115 overs in the last 7 days, with favorites sitting at about 15.5% against the spread, 123, 120, and 8 against the spread. If you're taking a look at just Wednesday, this is excluding the UCLA game, the favorites only covering about 47% of their games, but you take a look overall for the season, favorites have been covering in that neighborhood about 50.8%, 672, 652, and 20 against the spread. Meanwhile, the under hitting at a little bit over 51%, 680 unders to 649 overs. So that's where we're seeing college basketball right now, and that's where we're getting trend-wise. Coming up next, how about if we do chat with our good friend Matt Joseph, a.k.a. Mid-Major Matt, right here on Coast to Coast Heat, with myself, Craig Eames Peterson, now a part of the Peace and Family Podcast. Side edges college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is VSIN, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at CBBAnalytics.com. That is CBBAnalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter, and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSiN. VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSIN. Here, lovely Las Vegas for Cusco Seeps with myself, Greg Eves Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man, as we've got Matt Josephs. You may know him a little bit better as mid-major Matt, as this man does a little bit of everything. He's tremendous with regards to college football and college basketball front. He does a great job in the prop market over on the baseball side of things as well. When it comes to his work, he's over there at ESPN Radio Richmond doing the show Border to Border. He's on the Prop Queen website, the Prop Queen Podcast, and so much more. And you're able to follow him on Twitter /X at Major Matt altogether. And Matt, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me, Matt. And Matt, as we're doing this, we're about a month through the season thus far, so we're starting to get a nice sample size of these teams. And has there been anything that's been standing out to you, whether that be a few teams, something that you've been noticing in general in terms of prop market, just anything that has really been perhaps a little bit surprising to you to start the season?
Well, I mean, we've talked about there's a lot of points, especially a lot of totals that are higher than usual. And of course, when you have a team like IU Indianapolis, that's certainly going to happen. But we're seeing more teams who are playing with more pace, shall we say, and playing with less defense and more pace. I feel like we're seeing a lot more high totals. Now, I think some of that will change once we get into conference play. The games become more important, especially when you're in the mid-major realm and you're trying to get your seeding for March in your respective conferences. But I feel like right now we are seeing a lot more points and a lot more teams playing with a faster tempo, at least early on.
Yep, I've been noticing that as well. Even a team like Hawaii has been speeding up their tempo a little bit as well. And certainly it does lead to some of these teams being able to ascend. Some of these teams have been negatively impacted. And I just take a look at a team like Cincinnati, for instance. And do you think some of these teams have tried to speed themselves up, but it's just not worked out, like a team like Cincinnati might go back to the roots? Because I find there are quite a few teams that do that. Heck, San Diego State, it feels like over the last few seasons, they play much faster in non-conference play. They realize who they are, and then they slow down in conference play. I think that can always be a great angle when teams try to maybe make a little bit of a change and it doesn't quite work out.
Yeah, Wes Miller is going about 5 possessions per game faster than
and I don't understand
year.
Why.
Well, I mean, but the thing is, he did say before the season he was going to go faster, and certainly we've seen that. I mean, he started the season with an 80 possession game, and then the Dayton game was 81 possessions. But yeah, I think that we will start seeing maybe a bit slower, and I feel like it'll be against teams that want to play a lot slower. I think that you're going to see some games. You know, the Eastern Michigan game they lost, it was a 66 possession game because Eastern Michigan doesn't want to really run either. So I feel like they're going to slowly back things off a little bit. I think also when you start seeing them play more road games, because you can't install your tempo as easily on the road. And I see that, Cincinnati early on in conference play has a couple of road games. I think they're going to slow down a little bit. And I think that this is the time that you kind of finish figuring out rotations and how fast you want to go and how you want to run your offense.
Yep, absolutely. And it's been very intriguing to look at them, to say the least, as Matt Josephs, a.k.a. Mid-Major Matt, is joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And Matt, you're out there in the great state of Virginia, so you know all too well about the ACC-SEC Challenge. And we're doing this ahead of knowing what happened on Wednesday with regards to the challenge. But how have you taken a look at this year's challenge? Because last year it was not a challenge, it was just flat out a butt kicking. The ACC won 2 games. We saw a complete reversal this year with the ACC winning 6 games on Tuesday. And I just feel like the overall depth of the conference is finally back, whereas in the last few seasons you had like 3 or 4 good teams in the ACC, and then those teams that were like in the middle were just not competitive. And this year I feel like that competitiveness is finally back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just glad my alma mater Syracuse got a huge win over Tennessee,
and they're playing great defense.
Syracuse plays fantastic defense, but their free throw shooting is going to drive me crazy all season long. With some of these free throw motions that they have, it's going to drive me insane. But like, yeah, Syracuse plays really good defense, and that's going to keep you in ball games because they're not exactly the best offensively. But yeah, if you look, like a lot of the teams that we've talked about in the past are just playing better right now. You look at a Virginia Tech, that was a huge road win at South Carolina. Neo did not play very well, fouled out in the game, and they struggled down the stretch. They lost the lead. They went to overtime. They could have very easily lost on the road. I think Virginia Tech, despite the fact their net is not necessarily great, although it's very early for the net, I think Virginia Tech is going to be a factor. I think the Cavaliers will see what they do against Texas in their ACC-SEC game. I think that there is a lot more depth here. Now, look, it's still very early, and they could start going after each other. The Notre Dame win, I think, was huge too. Like, I like this Notre Dame team. I think they have some solid players. Marcus Burton, Shrewsbury, I think he's really good. Like, this is a team that should be pretty good and will be annoying at home with the way they play. But to have them get a win over Missouri, I thought was huge. So, like, yeah, this was great. What was it? It was like the first three games they had two wins, which tied last year. So even early, they were doing really well as a conference.
Yep, absolutely. It's been a little bit of a rough go of it the last few years for the ACC, going back to the ACC Big Ten Challenge, but it feels like a little bit of order is being restored. And with regards to the ACC, I know that you highlighted Syracuse and Notre Dame, but I think that Virginia Tech is an interesting team as well. As for Virginia Tech, I don't know what happened in the end of that South Carolina game at the end of regulation, as Michi Johnson decided to just not take a shot. That was very interesting, to say the least, but they're a team of a lot of intrigue as well, because they've been a little bit up and down. They bring in the international man of mystery from Greece, and Nikolas Avdeyas, and this is another one of those teams I feel like has a little bit of upside in the ACC.
Yeah, and they're doing it without Toby Lawal, who is a very nice player on their roster, although, you know, who knows how much longer he's going to be out and stuff like that. There was a very generic statement after the game about how long he's going to be out. But if you look, like, Amani Hansberry has kind of been that double-double guy for this team. You look at it, 22 points and 14 rebounds in that victory over South Carolina. Like, this is a team that I think has some defense to match the offense. I think at times their offense let down because they were always giving up points. This team still doesn't play great defense, but they have the offense to overcome mistakes. Now, it was disappointing. They went 1-2 in their MTE, but losing to St. Mary's and VCU is not the worst thing in the world. I'd like to see them take care of business. They've got four straight at home non-conference games, and then they'll play Virginia on New Year's Eve Day. But yes, this is a Virginia Tech team that I think can be a nuisance in this conference. Now, the question is, can they get their wins over the top of the conference and propel themselves onto the bubble, or is all their wins going to be against the lower part of the conference? And yeah, they're going to be playing in the NIT. That's the question they have to answer coming up.
Absolutely. As Matt Joseph, aka Mid-Major Matt, is joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And for the ACC, I still remember a few years ago, they literally had their first games of the season being conference games. And right now, we are actually experiencing some conference games. We're going to be seeing it in the Big West on Thursday. Right now, the Big Ten on Wednesday is playing some conference games. How do you take a look at the tenor of these conference games in like early December? Because to me, they just have a little bit of a different feel than they're going to after Christmas and after the New Year, because it just feels a little bit strange. When you got your non-conference games, you have conference games, and then you go back into non-conference games about a week or so later.
Yeah, like, I'm going to take these results with a grain of salt, I think, right now. I mean, obviously, look, like, Michigan State looked tremendous against Iowa, and that's a really good effort for Tom Izzo. It's still crazy to see Iowa playing 58 possession games. I can remember 58 possession games and a half before. I used to, you know, really hammer Iowa over in their non-conference games when the previous regime was there, but, like, now, no, I still pop.
Michigan State versus Iowa,
really,
not a game you probably want to take over.
No, that's for sure. These two teams don't want to run at all. But, like, you know, if this game comes up again and they don't play each other again during the actual conference season, but, like, I'll look at these results and I'll sit there and I'll be like, okay, and I'll take little parts of it, because, as you said, there could be some teams who change styles. There could be some teams who change rotations. There could be some teams who play some players more and some players less. Like, I think I'll look at these things and they're good for the standings, but they're not going to be the end all be all when I handicap a game coming up in February for what happened in November and December.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that that's so well said by you, because these are teams that are sort of evolving a little bit more, as Matt Joseph, aka Mid-Major Matt, is joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And are you perhaps going to take these next like four or five games that we're going to be seeing here in late November into early December a little bit more seriously than those first like two or three games? Because it did feel like first week or two of the season, teams were sort of trying to find their bearings. They were doing a little bit of trial by error, because you get the exhibition games and everything like that. But I mean, you don't necessarily get the world's greatest test of what these guys are. I feel like now we're starting to get a little bit of better data size, and I do think that what we're seeing right now is a little bit more of the true form of what these teams are.
Yeah, and the tougher part for these couple of weeks are, with no students there, how much does the home court advantage disappear? And we've talked about that in the past, these couple of weeks, and like this.
And I'll throw this in here as
to...
well. How much do you want to take a look at home court this week? Because this week, I feel like the students are there, but I think about 10 days from now is when you really start to see the ghost town arenas.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. Like, you almost want to go on some schools' websites and be like, all right, well, when are the kids leaving? Like, you know, we're seeing some kids at some of these games and the college football games, you know, with the conference championships and stuff like that. They come back for that or they leave a little bit later. But, like, that's where you kind of want to pay attention, because there are some plays. Like, this is the couple of weeks where I'm betting more underdogs, because I think that these home court advantages, you know, Duke is not as tough without the Cameron Crazies. You know, some of these other schools, Gonzaga is not as tough without the Kennel there. Like, I feel like this is the time that you have to pay attention to the vacations for these kids. And this is the time when you might take a 20-point underdog, because of the atmosphere may not be there to support a 20-point blowout. So, yeah, this is very important these next couple weeks. I almost learned some more about some of these teams and how they do without these atmospheres, and how many of them, like, survive only because their home court advantage is great. And as we like to refer to them, how many teams are home court heroes?
Yep, and I think that that is so well said by you, because there's always those teams. I look at Minnesota a few years ago where they're so good at home, and then on the road, that's their kryptonite. And that's a big key and a big X factor to be taking a look at in college basketball. And I do think that that's going to be something to be monitoring over the next few weeks. And we do have a few interesting games that are going to be going down on Thursday. And there is one game that I think is a little bit more towards your neck of the woods, with Davidson versus the Citadel. That's a 20.5-point line. So obviously it's a little bit ridiculous there. But how do you take a look at a team like a Davidson who's out there in the Atlantic 10? It feels like their offense has been very efficient, but they've been super duper slow, and they're playing against a Citadel team that, man, if you want to watch some bad basketball, if you turn on the Citadel, there you go.
Yeah, I'd almost look at taking maybe the Davidson team total over here. When I look at some of these teams and they don't play defense, I like to see what the home and road differences are. There will be no pace in this game. Davidson and Citadel, nobody wants to run. We've seen a couple of times Davidson go a little quicker. They went 79 possessions against Bowling Green, but Bowling Green doesn't mind playing a little bit faster at times, and plus they're a little bit more offensively gifted than the Citadel is. The Citadel's only played two true road games so far this season. They gave up 76 at Boston College in a 66 possession game, and then they gave up 100 at West Georgia in a 76 possession game, and that's a West Georgia team that doesn't really want to run, although at times they have so far this season. But it's more about the efficiency here. Davidson's offense is so good. Top 60 in two-point percentage, top 20 in three-point percentage. It could be a little bit better from the free throw line, that's for sure. But, like, Citadel's not going to force turnover, so it feels like this is a Davidson team that's going to be able to run a lot of what they want. I guess the question is, by the way, how did they get St. Mary's to come to Davidson on Sunday, December 7th? Like, how the heck did that game happen? I don't think there'll be a look ahead here for Davidson being more excited for St. Mary's, because you can't really afford to look ahead if you're Davidson, but, like, that's a huge game to get in your gymnasium next Sunday after this Citadel game.
Yeah, and how did South Florida land Utah State in a home game as well? That's going to be coming up for Thursday, and I would say that that's certainly the game of the day. You've got two very good mid-majors. South Florida, a little bit of a home underdog. I want to get your thoughts here on this, because South Florida is obviously one of those teams out there in the American that I think has a chance to actually win the American personally, because Memphis has looked a little bit wobbly. Temple has not been knocking anyone's socks off. Tulane has been a little bit of a disappointment. Well, frankly, we've had a lot of disappointments out there in the American. And for South Florida, even though they've lost quite a few games, they've really challenged themselves. And under this Brian Hodgson style, we know that they are going to run.
Yeah, they're going to run, and this is going to see a lot of possessions. It really comes down to the three-pointers. South Florida, not great at defending them. Utah State's pretty good at making them. Now, once again, and this is something I always look at, first true road game for Utah State. You know, this is a team that has not left home, and they played some neutral court games. And neutral court games you could certainly grade, but that's also different about going on the road. It's a long trip. Now, granted, who knows how early they left for South Florida. They last played on Saturday at home against Montana State in an overtime game. So, like, there's some questions that I have to ask about Utah State first true road game and the travel and all that sort of situation. South Florida's been off since Friday. Their defense isn't necessarily great. They send teams to the free throw line quite a bit. The other thing that South Florida does is they force turnovers. Utah State is kind of in the middle of the road when it comes to turnover percentage on offense. I'll learn a lot about Utah State in this game with that first road game for them. South Florida's only played two true home games, and it's Coppin State and Florida A&M, so we don't really know much about them there. So this is a game that I'm going to learn a lot for. And we do this podcast, I'm always a little bit more hesitant to bet on the smaller cards because I feel like the numbers are sharper. And everybody in college basketball who bets college basketball, they're all looking at these, what, nine games on Thursday. And so everybody's got their own angles and everything. And Vegas knows that. So these cards, I really have to be 100% sure as to what I want to take, because there's only nine games. You can't get nine games wrong. You can get 59 games wrong, or a card with 89 games wrong, but nine games, you're probably probably going to get some pretty accurate lines.
And we're going to be getting over 100 on Saturday as well. And when you get into the pipsqueak games and you've got yourself a lot of football that's coming up over the next few days, certainly there's probably going to be some mistakes being made there. But anything that might be popping out for Thursday, maybe it's not even a bet, but just maybe a team that you want to be gauging a little bit more of moving forward.
You know, obviously the Big West, with them playing their conference games, I want to see what some of these teams look like. I mean, UC Santa Barbara looks very good early on. They haven't really beaten anybody in Long Beach State. They should be able to win there. But, you know, Joe Pastrnak, year after year, just does a tremendous job for that team. It's funny because if you're not the guy who kind of is locked in on college basketball, you see Aiden Mahaney's name there and you're like, wait a second, he was at St. Mary's, forgetting, some people might forget that he was at UConn because he didn't exactly make the impact we thought at UConn that he was going to. So really, like, you know, UC Santa Barbara on a year-to-year basis, I think this is a team that consistently under Joe Pastrnak is very efficient. They're off offense is usually very good. They don't make a lot of mistakes. And I feel like they're going to do pretty well against Long Beach State in this game. So I'll be interested to see there. And just, you know, generically, I mean, UC Irvine's usually pretty good. How are they going to do in their first conference game? Russell Turner's a guy that I like to bet on. Now, his offense is brutal so far this season. He's in the 300s in a lot of categories on offense, but his defense is always there. I mean, they're number 7 against defending the 2-point percentage there. So how are they going to look against a UC Riverside team that is also pretty efficient on offense and actually has a pretty decent defense? The problem for them is they've been turning the ball over way too much so far this season. So how does Irvine look in their first conference game coming up?
Yep, and that is going to be a lot of fun to take a look at, as this UC Irvine team, they really don't enter into the transfer portal too much, but they just do such a great job of being able to build from within. And Matt, you do a great job in terms of just building things up on so many different sports, whether that be great props in baseball, college football, college basketball, we name it, you do it. You're in a wide variety places and doing so also well. So love the good people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people are able to follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, at Mid-Major Matt on Twitter. As you said, I like to go for some of the markets that not necessarily the most bet, team totals, first half bets, first quarter bets in other sports and stuff like that. So I know Greg gets questions a lot about certain things that he doesn't necessarily handicap. So you can always ask me at Mid-Major Matt. All my plays are tracked in the Action Network, so you can't ever question records and sort of things like that. We all have the same goal. We all want to beat the books. And so anytime anybody has any questions, they can just ask.
Absolutely. And Matt, he's doing such a tremendous job taking a look at this great game of college basketball. And every single time he joins me, on such great insights. So big thanks to Matt for joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Matt Josephs, better known as Mid-Major Matt. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights, and he did so once again today. So big thanks to Matt for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /xfeed at gunit_81, and we're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. Today, that is time order. We don't have any games on the extra games board or anything like that. About as clean as it gets. It's a small card, but a fun one. Let's start off with 763, 764 on the card. Robert Morris is on the road against UW Green Bay. Green Bay is a home underdog of 1.5 points, 139.5 is the total, and I'm actually in on Green Bay on the money line. I set Green Bay as a 2-point favorite. We are actually seeing this team playing some respectable basketball. Even in the two games that they were without Marcus Hall out there in the Virgin Islands, they pulled off wins against UMass and Iona. It's a team that is protecting the ball, a top 75 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis, while Robert Morris is 3-10 with this regard. Now Green Bay not forcing any turnovers whatsoever, bottom 20 team with that regard, but you've been seeing the guys on a Marcus Hall be able to step up for this team. Justin Allen, along CJ O'Hara, both been able to give you between 12 and 12 and a half points per game. It's a Green Bay team that is once again one of the worst teams in terms of grabbing offensive rebounds, but they themselves are not allowing opponents to grab a lot of second and third chances as well. Caden Wilkins has been able to throw in there about 8 points per game, so you've had some nice mixing and matching. And when it comes to the Robert Morris side of things, Nicholas Chattakoulis, he's going to be the best rebounder in this game. He's been able to supply the team within that neighborhood about 7-8 rebounds per game, so he's been able to do a pretty pretty rock solid job there. Now, if you're looking at Marcus Hall and whether or not he's going to be playing for Green Bay, it's a little bit suspect because he has been out each of the last three games. So we are very much awaiting to see that. And I personally ruled him out when I made this handicap. Him being back would be all the better. But even with him out, it is a Robert Morris team that is just so suspect right now with that backward play because they lose so many of the guys that sent up to the NCAA tournament last year. Ryan Prather is that main holdover. 12.5 points. He's shooting about 31% from 3 points. And Deshaun Good has been good. 9 boards, 11 points per game. You like what you're seeing there. But Dazier Smith, the junior college transfer, only about 5.5 points per contest. These guys have been leaving a little bit of something to be desired. And with regards to this Robert Morris team, they're a team that's going to be very much looking to kick the ball a little bit more inside. Their 2-point shot rate is one of the higher ones at all of college basketball because they just don't have the backcourt play of a season ago. They've been solid in terms of grabbing second and third chances, top 75 team in terms of their offensive rebound percentage. But I think that Green Bay does a nice job in terms of denying those second chances. Now, I do think that you're going to be able to get enough possessions for the over. I do think that you get some late game fouling here. It's a Green Bay team that is really not pushing a ton of tempo right now in terms of total possessions per game. They're clocking in about 325th in all of college basketball. Robert Morris has settled down just a little bit as well. Robert Morris last year was a bit more up-tempo. This year, they're about 299th, but I do think that both of these teams execute on offense, and I like the way that Green Bay has revamped themselves. I'm taking Green Bay on the money line, set at 12-144. I'm also in on the over. 765, 766 on the card. Ryder is on the road against Merrimack, and the Merry Men of Merrimack do find themselves as a mid-tier favorite here. You're going to be laying between 7.5 to 8.5 points total on this game. You're finding it at a 136.5 to a 137.5, and I said Merrimack as a 12.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay it. This Ryder team is not good, to say the least. This Ryder team is currently 361st in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. Actually, check that, 364th out of 365 teams in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. Just getting all the more worse. Now they face off against a Merrimack defense that in every year since they joined the D1 ranks of the 2018-19 season, I believe, they've been in the top 41 in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. Right now, they're just 67th, but they got to combine 33 turnovers against Hofstra and LaSalle, so they're getting things rocking and rolling there. Merrimack always a team that gets bludgeoned on the glass, but I mean, this Ryder team, they lose the two Ingrams from a season ago down low. They have been absolutely awful on the glass as well, so you've got a pair of teams that they really can't rebound. It is Merrimack team that's currently 361st in all of college basketball in terms of rebound percentage. That Florida game did them no favors whatsoever, but Ryder's 272nd as well, and for Ryder, really outside of Flash Burton, you just don't have a lot going on here. For Flash Burton, he's done a nice job giving the team 11.5 points, 4 boards per contest. Zion Cruz, he's been able to throw in their 11.5 points per game as well. And we should see the team shoot better than 24% from 3-point range moving forward, but they're a bottom 30 team in taking care of the ball as they're turning the ball over 15 times per game. You've got one guy on the roster giving you more than 4.2 rebounds per game. That'd be Caleb Smith. He's got 8 rebounds, but he only stands about 6'5", so Merrimack, who typically just gets destroyed on the glass, they're going to be able to hold in there as they've been able to get some good production out of Ernest Shelton, who at 6'5" has been a nice combo player, 16.5 points, shooting 38% from 3. Merrimack shooting 29% from 3 as well. They've never been a great 3-point shooting team, but we should see a little bit of a rise there. Ty Dorsett has been able to throw in there about 9.5 points per contest. Lone guy for Merrimack that's giving you over 4 rebounds per game, by the way, Todd Brogna, who hasn't really worked out coming over from Stonehill. 5.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game. He was a double-figure scorer over at Stonehill. You've got Andres Marrero, who over at LaSalle 2 years ago was a really good 3-point shooter. Right now he's shooting 27% from 3 with 9 points per game. I do think that you see a little bit of a rise up there, and after it was a little bit tough for Merrimack to generate turnovers towards the beginning part of the season, it does feel like they're restoring a little bit of order, and for both of these teams, neither of them are really pushing a lot of tempo. You've got a Merrimack team that's back outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game. Riders who are in 34th, but I do think that Merrimack, who struggled on offense, they get it going against this Ryder team that's just been bleeding points. And for Ryder, the question becomes, do they do their part with the Soto? I think not. So my total 136.5, so here at the 137 plus in on the under, and I'm willing to lay it with Merrimack, set them as a 12.5 point favorite. 767, 768 on the card. The Citadel is on the road against Davidson. Davidson's a 20.5 point favorite. 142.5 to 143 is the total, and I did set a low total here of a 136. I'm in on the under, mainly because you've got Davidson team as 323rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. The Citadel's 354th, and Davidson has been a top 50 team in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. You've done a solid job there. You've had Hunter Adam at 6'7" be Mr. Versatile. He's throwing in there 12.5 points, shooting 53% from 3-point. Now, Davidson only has one guy on the roster. That'd be Ian Plateau, who's giving you over 4 rebounds per game. He's at 4.5 boards per contest, but he's been missing for the last few games, and he's probably going to be out once again. But you got some mix and match guys. Sam Brown, a double-figure score from Penn last year. He's been able to deliver 9.5 points per game. Josh Scovins, who was over at Army, 10.5 points, 3.5 boards, a steal and a half per contest. It's Davidson, pretty solid in terms of generating turnovers. Southwood's 75 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They're really not giving themselves a lot of second and third chances, but for the Citadel, despite the fact that this actually has been a team that's taking care of the ball, they're a top 90 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis, only about 9.5 turnovers per game. They just don't have any shooting whatsoever. They're outside the top 260 in 2-point shooting percentage, 3-point shooting percentage, and free throw shooting percentage. And with this bunch, you've been able to get a little bit out of Christian Moore, who has been able to give you more, 11 points per game, shooting 41% from 3. So Edbasi is really the main returner from a season ago down low. He's been able to give the team 6 rebounds per game. Has dealt with a little bit of ailment, though. He's been out each of the last 3 games, and it's not looking very encouraging for him to return anytime soon, so that's not great. Braxton Williams has been able to give you about 11 points per game, shooting in the low 30s from 3-point range. And for Davidson, it is a unit that is outside the top 150 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. The Citadel well outside the top 225 with this regard as well, but I think that you just get a very slow, controlled game. The Citadel is very content to really not push tempo, even though they have been trailing in a lot of these games. I don't understand why. Maybe it's because you really don't have a point guard, as Keenan Davis, he returns from a season ago. He's giving you 8 points. 2.1 assists per game leads the way, and that's a big issue for this team. And I do think that that allows the Davidson team, has been incredibly efficient on the offensive end, to be able to get the job done in a slowdown game. Set my line at 24. 108 Davidson, set a total of 136. I'm in on the under. 769, 770 on the card. South Florida plays also Utah State. Utah State is a road favorite of 2.5 points. 162 to 162.5 is the total. Set a total of a 167. I'm going to be in on the over. Have a South Florida team that's just absolutely gunning it. Right now, this team is number 3 in all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game. Utah State, a little bit more of a mid-tempo team, but you've got a pair of teams that are currently really efficient on the offensive side of things. Utah State, 8th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis away from home. South Florida, 17th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis at home, and you have a pair of teams that they gamble for turnovers, which leaves them very vulnerable from 3-point range. South Florida, 33rd in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Utah State, they are 25th, but with South Florida, they're allowing teams to shoot 37% from 3-point range overall this year, 295th in the country. Utah State is allowing teams to shoot 38.3% from 3-point range in games played away from home, so we should be getting a lot of good 3-point looks here. And I did take a shot on South Florida on the money line. This has been a top 40 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound. You've got quite a few guys that came on over from Arkansas State, including the coach in Brian Hodgson, as one of the main guys, Isaiah Nelson, 12.5 points, 9.5 boards. He's been rock solid down low. Joseph Pignon has been hit or miss from 3-point range, 13.5 points, but he has been able to give the team 2 steals. He's shooting 34% from 3. I like the Robert Morris transfer, and Joshua Omajafo has done a bit of everything, filling up the stat sheet. 15 points, 5 boards, 2.5 assists, steal and a half, shooting on the high 30s from 3-point range. And for Utah State, I do think that the travel is going to be a little bit much for them in this case. In a neutral court spot, I would be setting Utah State as a favorite because they have been efficient on both sides of things. And MJ Collins might be the best player in this game. 21 points. He comes over from Virginia Tech, and he's shooting right now 52% from three. I think that there's going to be a little bit of regression with the fact that Utah State is shooting 39.5% from three. But for Utah State, they are a team that has a little bit of, shall we say, hit or missness outside of what you've been able to get out of MJ Collins, as you've got Gary Clark, who's been able to shore things up down low, 8.5 boards, 11.5 points per game. Mason Fosloff, he returns from last year, do-it-all guy, 13.5 points, 5.5 boards, 2 assists, nearly 2.5 steals per contest as well, but they do leave themselves vulnerable from 3-point range. This has been a squad that has been turning the ball over about 12.5 times per game themselves, so they have been a little bit sloppy with it. Kobe King, he comes over off the bench, he's been able to get the team about 4.5 boards, 11 points per game, but I do think that for South Florida, we see a little bit of positivity with that 3-point shooting defense. I think that they do a nice job of being able to control things down low, as Carson Templin, who's back from a season ago for Utah State, to be able to give you 4.5 rebounds per game. And I do think that the home environment allows South Florida to be able to hand Utah State their first loss of the season in a game that I think is going to be very much up and down. Set South Florida is 1-point favorite. I like them on the money line. Made a total of 167. I'm in on the over. 771, 772 on the card. UC Santa Barbara is going to be playing us to Long Beach 8. Long Beach 8, an 11.5 point underdog. 147.5 to a 148 is the total. And Set a total of a 142.5. I'm going to be in on this total under for Santa Barbara. This has really never been a team that has pushed tempo, and they've been right there again, 284th in the country towards the total possession spring. Long Beach State is pushing a little bit more tempo than they did a season ago, but not a team that's going to play at warp speed themselves, 226th in the country in terms of total possession spring. Santa Barbara has not been quite the same defense this year. They've been a bit better on offense with adding in their Aiden Mahaney. Just couldn't find his groove over at Connecticut last season. He's come over. He's been able to get the team 12.5 points per game, as you've got some very nice balanced scoring right now for Santa Barbara. You've got five different guys, Mahaney, Colin Smith, Mario Little, Zion Sensley, and CJ Shaw. I'll give you between 10.3 and 13 points per contest. That's a group that as a whole for Santa Barbara, shooting about 36.5% from three-point range, and they've been able to do a really good job of generating second and third chances. They've been a top 125 team in terms of offensive rebound percentage, and they're not allowing opponents to grab second chances. They've been a top 45 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage as well, and that's big because this Long Beach State team, well, they have not necessarily been a team that has been very rock solid in terms of just their overall shooting, as right now they're shooting 31% from three. Now, Santa Barbara has been allowing teams to shoot over 36% from three. I think that there's going to be some positive regression there, and it is a Long Beach State team that now ranks in the top 150 in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, but they themselves have been having a little bit of a tough time doling out the ball, as Rob Diaz and Isaiah Lewis have sort of split time at the point guard spot. They've been able to combine for about 5.8 assists per game, but you've got Lewis giving you about 2.5 turnovers per game. Both of these guys shoot less than 25% from 3-point range. You've had Peter Mistrovsky. He comes over from Syracuse, give you about 12.5 points, 6.5 boards, so he's been able to give you a little bit of something there. And for Long Beach State, they're doing a nice job in terms of not allowing second and third chances as well. They've been a top 75 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage as well, so that's been pretty rock solid. But it is a Long Beach State team that's outside the top 270 in terms of their 3-point shooting percentage, their 2-point shooting percentage, and their free throw shooting percentage. And I do think that that's going to be a little bit costly for the over. And then one of your top rebounders from a season ago, Derek Michael Seviero, he's only been able to give the team about 2.5 rebounds per game. And with Mario Little coming over from Utah and Baylor, all of his versatility, I think that that's just enough for Santa Barbara to be able to get the job done. Set Santa Barbara is a 12.5 point favorite, so want to lay the 11.5 in on the under, sub by total 142.5. Sub 73, sub 74 on the card. UC Riverside is on the road against UC Irvine. Zot, the Anteaters find themselves as a favorite of between 11 to 11.5 points. Thought on scheme, it is between 140 to 140.5. And I did set the total at a 145.5. I do like the over. You've got a Riverside team that is now under the tutelage of a man that was over at Cal State Bernardino a season ago, and he was able to do a good job there, led the team to the Final Four in Gus Arginal. And with Arginal's teams, they always won the turnover battle, but we're seeing the exact opposite this year with this Riverside team, and that's a big reason why I said Irvine is an 11.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 11 with them, with this Riverside team outside the top 300 in terms of their overall ball security. Now, they've done a nice job holding teams only shoot about 30% from three-point range, but I mean, they are getting killed on the glass as they're outside the top 320 in terms of offensive rebound percentage. They just don't generate for themselves second and third chances. Andrew Henderson has been very rock solid. He's given the team 17.5 points, shooting about 38.5% from three-point range. He comes on up from the non-D1 ranks, and then the UMass transfer, Markel Worthy. Well, he's been a worthy point guard. 3.5 assists, 14 points per game, but 4 turnovers per game. That is one of the worst marks that you're going to find in all of college basketball. And for UC Irvine, they've actually sped up their tempo a little bit more in recent seasons. This is an Irvine team that, in terms of total possessions per game, they're clocking at about 138th in the country. Riverside, a little bit slower. They're more around about 230th, but this is an Irvine team that can do a really nice job going down low and just being able to put up points. This is a team that they really don't take a lot of threes. They're in the top 10 in the country in terms of percentage of their shots that come from inside the three-point line, and that's big when you've got a guy in Kyle Evans who's able to give you 3 blocks, 10 points, 7 boards, shooting 65% from the floor. In the backcourt, you've had Jaron Dixon, Darren Sarin combined for 31 points per game, and Dixon on the threes eight takes, he's shooting 41% from the outside. It is an Irvine team that has been a little bit sloppy with the ball, with about 13 turnovers per game, but they've been a top 125 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. I do think that they're going to be able to turn that defense into offense. Now, Irvine is actually uncharacteristically giving up a lot of second and third chances as well. They've been outside the top 275 in terms of defensive rebound percentage, so both teams, I think, are going to have a lot of second and third chances to be able to score in this game. I think that it's going to be physical, bringing both teams to the free throw line, and in the end, in a physical game, I like UC Irvine to get the job done. I'm willing to lay up to 11 with them. Did set a total here of a 145.5, so also in on the over. 775, 776 on the card. Cal Poly is on the road against Cal State Fullerton. Fullerton is a underdog of 1.5 points total on this game. It is 174.5 to 176.5. I set a total of a 168. I'm in on the under, and with Cal Poly, I am not willing to go past a 0.5, but I did set them as a 2-point favorite, so I'm going to be willing to lay the 0.5. Both of these teams playing at warp speed. Cal Poly is right now In terms of total possessions per game, number 7 in all of college basketball. Fullerton, depending on the day, they're either 11th or 12th in the country, so both of these teams are gunning it. But Cal Poly is doing the little things well. Even though they're scoring fewer points per possession, Cal Poly about 235th with this regard. So even though these teams are playing fast, they're not necessarily efficient on the offensive end. Fullerton more around about 204th. This is a Fullerton team that's 340th in terms of their offensive rebound percentage. You're only grabbing about 22 to 23% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound. Cal Poly has been a top 200 team with this regard. Cal Poly about 211th in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Fullerton, right now they're checking in 300, so I will say Cal Poly 17 turnovers per game. That's a little bit rough, and after Fullerton could not take care of the ball last year, they've actually cleaned that up. They've been a top 100 team in terms of ball security, but with this Cal Poly team, you've got a pair of guys in Hamad Musa along with Peter Benjai who have been very good at just supplying the offense for this team. They're both combining for about 33 points per game, and Musa is shooting 44.9% from 3-point. Should see a little bit of regression there, but even though this team doesn't necessarily have one like true big man or anything like that, you've had Ali Asarin be able to give you 6 rebounds per game. Right now it's been a mix and match. You've got 5 different guys give you at least 4.3 rebounds per game. Kerryon Elliott, Peter Benjai, these guys have been able to give you about 4.5 boards per contest, and Benjai, he's been able to give you those 15.5 points per game to really carry the day. And for Fullerton, this team has been able to clean up their act in terms of the turnovers, but they're just not really a great shooting team. They're shooting 30.5% from 3-point range. You've had Josh Ward be very rock solid with about 16 points per game, and Bryce Cofield, he's come in, he's been able to give the team 14 points as a true freshman from Sierra Canyon. They did a nice job with regards to recruiting him. And then Jefferson De La Cruz Manegro, he began his career over at both Western Michigan along Valparaiso, about 11.5 points per game. You just don't necessarily have a ton of size outside of one of their main holdovers from a season ago, and Kendrick DeLuna, and he's only been able to give you about 5.3 rebounds per game. So this is a team that's very suspect with regards to their low post play. It is a Fullerton team that is outside the top 300 in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage, and I think that Cal Poly is going to be able to exploit that and get the job done. I think that Cal Poly is going to be able to take care of the ball a little bit more against a Fullerton team that's just not generating those turnovers. So I did set my line at 2. I do like Cal Poly laying it up to 1.5. I think that you get a lot of depth possessions here. So at 12-168, I'm in on the under. 777, 778 on the board. It is Cal State Bakersfield. Meet for the Roadrunners on the road against Northridge. Cal State Northridge, 4.5 point favorite. So on this game, it is 154 to 154.5. So Northridge has an 8-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number with this Northridge team. They're doing a much better job in terms of the glass than Cal State Bakersfield. Both of these teams have been horrible at taking care of the ball, by the way. You've got a Bakersfield team that right now is 327th in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. Northridge is 328th. But that said, for Bakersfield, they're looking to pound the ball inside. They're 7th in terms of percentage of their shots that come from 2-point range, but they're 268th in terms of 2-point shooting percentage, and they're allowing opponents to grab 32.4% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound. That's 276th in all of college basketball, so it's a team that's looking to define themselves inside, and they're not doing a great job inside. They had the coaching change in the offseason that was all sorts of not great, and you've got a Northridge team that is headlined by Larry Hughes Jr. Yes, that Larry Hughes. He's shooting 46% for 3. He's been able to give the team 16 points per game. Joshua Garrett should be the best rebounder in this game. 10 boards, 13 points per game, and then Josiah Davis. He is turning the ball over about 4.9 times per game. That's a bottom 5 mark in all of college basketball, but he's come on over from Niagara, Tennessee Tech, and he's been able to give the team a little bit over 5 assists, 12.5 points per game, and they go up against Bakersfield. That has been okay in terms of generating turnovers. Last year, Northridge was a top 40 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They've taken a little bit of a setback there, but again, Bakersfield is generating just as many turnovers as Northridge right now on offense, and they've been built around C.J. Hardy along with Dalen Smith. These two guys have been able to combine for about 32 points per game. Smith comes on over from the SWAC. He's been able to only shoot about 21% for 3, but he's generating a steal per game. C.J. Hardy was a 40% 3-point shooter last year. He's doing that same thing this year. Ron Jessamy from Tennessee Tech has been able to give you 2.5 blocks, 7 rebounds per game, so he's been pretty rock solid. Past him, nobody else really gives you more than 4.5 rebounds per game, and that is a little bit more of the style with Bakersfield. But Pierre Gensterse Jr., he comes on over from Fresno State. He's a 6'11 big man. He's been dealing with a little bit of an injury. Just got back out there on the floor in their last game against Fresno State, so he should be good to go here. But you've had a little bit of injury concerns down low for this team, and I do think that for this Bakersfield team, they're just not going to be efficient enough on the offensive end to be able to get the job done. And you're going to have a little bit of dueling styles, as with this Bakersfield team, they're typically relatively slow and controlled. They're now 90th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. But Fullerton, they just fly. They are currently 12th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. I do, though, think that you get a lot of dead possessions with the way that these two teams are turning the ball over. Set a total of a 154. So at the 154.5 in on the under, and I'm willing to lay up to 7.5 with Northridge. We wrap things up with 779, 780 on the card. Hawaii is playing us to UC Davis. UC Davis is an underdog of 9.5 to 10 points, 142.5 to 143 is a total. Made a total of a 139.5. I'm in on the under. Hawaii's been playing a little bit faster this year. It's a byproduct of the fact that it feels like there's about a billion fouls being called on the island. Hawaii is currently 73rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. You've got a UC Davis team that has just never really been looking to fly too much. They're up a little bit with regards to their tempo from a season ago, 192nd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. But typically for this UC Davis team, they just have that one main headline scorer. Elijah Pepper was that a few seasons ago. They had Ty Johnson last year. And right now for UC Davis, they've been looking a little bit more to Niles Cooper to perhaps be that guy. 17.5 points, 5 boards. It is a Davis team that just is getting pounded on the glass. They're outside the top 175 in terms of rebound percentage. And Hawaii last year was a top 25 team in terms of rebound percentage. I don't know if they're quite going to be that good, but so you've got a 7-footer that comes on over from Utah State and Isaac Johnson, who's been highly versatile. 16 points, 8 boards, and he's actually shooting 38.5% from 3. Hawaii as a whole is only shooting about 28.5% from the outside, but they've been getting 31 free throw attempts per game. That's a top 5 mark in all of college basketball. Do you think that that might be going downward a little bit, but for Hawaii, a lot of dead possessions here. They've been turning the ball over about 14.5 times per game outside the top 275 in terms of ball security. UC Davis, 14.5 turnovers per game. They're right there, but UC Davis, a top 75 team in terms of generating turnovers, turnovers force on a per possession basis. They've been a top 125 team in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage. Nico Dokoč has done a nice job, giving you about 10.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 2.5 blocks per contest, so he's doing a nice job stuffing the stat sheet there. I do think that this UC Davis team generates enough turnovers, makes this a sloppy enough game to be able to hold in there, and it's a UC Davis team that, despite generating a lot of turnovers, they're middle of the road in terms of their fouling, so they're not doing a ton to put teams onto the free throw line, which I think is a big thing, and that's why I do like the under. I set my total 139.5. I'm willing to take the under. Set Davis as a 9.5 point favorite, so I need all 10 plus points, but won't take 10 plus here with Davis to go with the under, and that'll wrap things up for the Thursday edition of Coast to Coast Soup Style, part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Big thanks to Matt Josephs, aka Major Matt, for joining me in the last segment. If you do like sharing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Soups, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one or two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter /XTimeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letter CM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. And I'm with you guys every single day on this podcast, give you picks and analysis on every single game, every single day. So I'll be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.